Well, welcome. My name is John Denny. I am the full-time staff chaplain for the South Carolina National Guard, and we're starting today this concept. I don't know if it's going to go over well or not, but we will see. It's called Chap Chat. And the idea behind Chap Chat is we do a good job of telling the story of the South Carolina National Guard and what our soldiers do. The intent of this podcast is to understand who our soldiers are, understand who our soldiers are in uniform, but also, more importantly, where they get their strength from and who they are as people. So as the full-time chaplain for the South Carolina National Guard, I get the unique opportunity of talking with a lot of soldiers who have unique perspectives. Maybe they've been through the ringer with life, but yet they still continue to find growth and purpose. They find resilience in the difficulties of life. And those are some of the stories I want to tell. And our first guest today for our inaugural, in keeping with the presidential theme, our inaugural Chap Chat is a dear friend of mine, Greg Brown, who is a pastor at St. David's Lutheran Church, and he's also the chaplain for the 678th Brigade. So welcome, Greg. I'm glad you're here. So when I was thinking about this, Greg, to set some context, tell me a little bit about your faith journey and how it is that you came to be a pastor, but also wanting to be able to serve the soldiers of the South Carolina National Guard.
Sure. So I was raised in the Lutheran Church from the time I was like 4 years old. I was baptized Presbyterian, so we don't put that out publicly, you know. but when my folks moved to a Lutheran church, kind of never really left. I did some wandering in my high school years. Never really left the church, but checked out a whole bunch of different denominations, only to find that I was at home the whole time, right where I had been planted as a young boy. Went to college, felt a call to ministry, but that was all after, at 17 years old, I joined the Army National Guard here in South Carolina.
At 17?
At 17. So here in less than a month, I hit my 20.
Amen. So, yeah. Nice.
So I spent the first 6 years of my military career as an enlisted signal soldier, and throughout that process, I was in ROTC at Lander University, contracted to commission, and then ended up getting out of that after had some conflict with getting an education delay to go to seminary. So it was really through the process of serving as a contracted cadet in this SMP program that I really kind of figured out that, hey, wait a second, this call that I'm feeling to ministry is really rooted in my call to be a soldier. So I spent more time as an SMP cadet
counseling. And for those that don't know,
simultaneous membership program. So you're a contracted cadet in an ROTC program in college and drilling with a National Guard unit. For those of you that are out there listening that have ever seen somebody wearing one of those dots, that's it, right?
Okay.
So we were short on officers, so I was in a platoon leader slot. And I spent all of my time counseling soldiers about life issues rather than military issues, and realized, wait a second, this really has much more to do with my faith perspective than it does my Army leadership perspective. And the lines started to get really blurry.
Right.
I was like,
right,
wait a second. So there's a way that we can do both of these things. And so after graduating, I went to seminary and really thought that I was being called to be an active duty chaplain. I had no interest when I graduated college in being a parish pastor. I did not want to be that pastor that has to hold your grandmother's hand while she floats off to meet Jesus. It just did not sound like a good time to me.
Right.
But now that's the most holy work that I get to do.
Yeah. So, there's something very sacred, right?
Absolutely.
And we've talked about that. Something very sacred about being with people in their last days. I would much rather do a funeral
than a wedding.
Amen. Yeah, right. Right.
Absolutely.
And no, we're not sadistic. Maybe a little.
Maybe
but a little.
People actually care what you have to say when it's a funeral, and
right,
when it's a wedding, they're just ready to go
right,
crack a cold one and celebrate.
Yeah, they're coming up in the pulpit taking pictures.
That's right.
Yeah. And so you're just coming off a heck of a week where you had three of your parishioners pass away.
Yep.
And there are also eight or nine, I think you had said, that were hospitalized. Yeah.
So it's been a busy last 10 days or so.
Yeah. Yeah. And plus you've got your counseling load and follow-up load that you do with the soldiers for South Carolina. So you're burning the candle at both ends. And, oh, yeah, P.S., you also have this family thing that you got to worry about.
Yeah.
So you and I were talking over lunch a couple months back, and this plays into what my thought of for this podcast is about. I talked about resilience, but a big component of that to me is also spiritual resilience.
Absolutely.
And for those people that are grounded in faith and their spiritual practices and spiritual life, they find great strength from that. Mm-hmm. And you had told me something that was real interesting, I thought.
Okay.
And you were talking about the impact that communion has on you.
Yes.
And how that grounds you.
100%.
And it really spoke volumes to me, because you put it in some context and perspective that I never thought about.
Sure.
So would you mind sharing what it is about the Eucharist, about communion? And for those listening, you may not really care about this part, but hopefully you'll be able to get a couple nuggets out from what Greg's going to be saying here.
Sure. For me, the grounding thing, it really is, it's about being connected, receiving food for the journey. It's the, you know, every week at St. David, we celebrate Holy Communion. Every time I have worship with soldiers on a drill weekend, that never happens without having Holy Communion. It's a central part of worship. For me as a Lutheran Christian, and a gift that we have to really share with the world around us. The Eucharist is always set within the context of the liturgical ritual life of the church. And it's really a way of marking time, but also connecting us to the life and story of Jesus. And so what we're offered in this gift of Holy Communion is Jesus' own body and blood given and shed for us. And, you know, Luther was really big on telling us that, you know, the most important words that we hear in the context of worship is the body of Christ given for you. The for you part is the most important, because this cosmic, huge God transcends all of the crazy crap of the world and knows us and loves us so intimately and fully that it's individually for us, and that same gift connects us then to our brothers and sisters, the whole world around, that no matter where you're at in the world, there's someone that you're connected to through this sacramental life of the church. The place where I really kind of began to learn how important this is to me, growing up in the church, we had communion like once a month. And I was like, that's really kind of, you know, that's normal, whatever. Didn't know any different, right?
Right.
And then I come to seminary here in Columbia, and all of a sudden, I'm having Holy Communion twice a week, because we have it once a week on campus, and then every Sunday in the local congregation that I was serving in as a student. I'm like, man, this is really different. And then if for some reason I wasn't there because, it was a drill weekend, and as a chaplain candidate and not ordained yet, I couldn't preside at the table, so I was missing it. And that's when I was like, wait a second, there's something to this. And I really began to want it, that connection, not only to God, but to our brothers and sisters around us in the, you know, in the room where they're celebrating the same thing, but also literally around the world. Secondly, when I was mobilized to Germany a couple of years ago, the one thing that I struggled with my own faith in that process was, what am I going to do on Sundays? You know, we were in an active duty garrison. There's chapel services galore.
Right.
There wasn't really a need for Chaplain Greg Brown to have a Sunday service at the barracks for our soldiers, because they were out doing their own thing, going, you know, they were plugged in. It was a great thing. And then I discovered that there was a Episcopal service on the same installation that we were at. And, oh, by the way, they didn't have a priest.
Ah.
So the ELCA, the denomination I belong to, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and the Episcopal Church USA are full communion partners. So suffice it to say, our clergy are interchangeable. So I went to worship there one Sunday trying to just go to church, and it was their lay Eucharistic minister's last Sunday. And I was like, oh no. Oh man, I kind of really like this, like taking a break on Sundays thing from the parish for a little while, but here's this group of people that need some help. And I also want the same thing that they're wanting, which is to be able to worship, to be able to receive Holy Communion. Okay. So, I went up and talked to some folks afterwards, and I said, hey, I understand y'all need a priest. I said, well, I'm not a priest, but I'm a Lutheran pastor and we're interchangeable. So, had to get a letter from my bishop sent over from the United States. And in very short order, I was leading worship almost every Sunday at this Episcopal congregation on Kappan Air Station in Germany, which was a great time. But it was the missing link of not being able to ground my life in the ritual action of the church that made me realize that there was something missing in my own self. The piece that would give me the strength to keep doing the work each and every week, going TDY here and there all the time, or dealing with some of the issues we had going on within the unit. Just without that piece, I would have been much less effective.
Right.
If it's, I hate to make it sound like such a oversimplification, but when you ride on an airplane, they tell you, you need to put your own oxygen mask on first if the cabin loses pressure.
Sure.
All right. What's that for me? And for me, that's remaining connected to God and to our brothers and sisters, in the sacramental life of the church.
Right. So, that's awesome. That's awesome. And for those that are listening that may not share the same faith beliefs or faith traditions that Greg is talking about, Greg had said something that I think is poignant that transcends faith tradition, it transcends religion, but you had talked about connecting universally.
Yes.
And so to me, that's such a powerful point that I don't want people to miss, because there is something to be said about finding a practice in your own life that connects you to something greater than yourself, but then also connecting you to others.
Absolutely.
And for you, that's communion.
For sure.
And for others, it may be, well, I remember when I was deployed, we had a Wiccan soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took him to a Wiccan prayer circle at Fort Hood. Is this still Fort Hood?
Fort Cavazos.
Fort Cavazos. I can't keep up with these changes. And I didn't know anything about the Wiccan tradition, right? I didn't. But part of my job as a chaplain is to perform or provide.
Absolutely.
So I couldn't perform the Wiccan service.
But we can sure make sure that soldier gets where they need to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I did that, and I was on the outside of this circle, and it was really a beautiful thing. And yeah, I had some preconceived notions, I'll admit that.
Sure.
But to be able to see a soldier connect with a bunch of other people that he didn't know, but they were all there for the same purpose, to be able to connect with nature, with their higher power, and with each other. Well, it was just a beautiful, powerful thing.
Absolutely. It has to be, right? It's one of those things that transcends the human experience, no matter what name you call it. The power of human connection, the divine connection, by whatever name you call it, it's life-giving. Even when you witness people experiencing that in a manner that is different than your own.
Right.
I think there's still something to be learned and appreciated about it.
Absolutely. And I appreciate your perspective on that, because Some people are so dogmatic, they're like, no, no, no. But as chaplains, we can't be that way.
Right.
Or we can. We just
We shouldn't.
We shouldn't. So part of our role is just that, is to help other people be able to connect in with their spirit, with their God or gods, in a way so they can have that universal connection that you were talking about as well.
Absolutely.
So the last question I have for you is, I have two, and then we'll wrap it up, is, so you had said that you give communion to the soldiers at drill.
Yep.
And honestly, the time that you give that religious service, potentially that's the only time.
Many of them get it all month long.
All month long.
Yep.
Both a religious service and both communion.
Yes.
So how is, when you offer communion, at first they were probably a little surprised.
For sure.
But then how have you seen that impact their lives?
One, it's really kind of funny. So I also supervise a chaplain candidate who is a wonderful preacher, Lieutenant Josh McGee. He does a great job. And so like this past month, we had a thing going on at church that I couldn't miss. Religious services were scheduled for, 8:30 that morning. And so I wasn't going to be there, but Josh can preach and they can sing some songs together, which he's also an excellent musician. He plays guitar, makes me look really bad. but, he led a religious service that morning in my absence, and he did a great job. And yet, the first text that I got from another soldier was, "Hey, man, Josh did a great job this morning." He said, "But I really wished we'd had communion."
Wow.
And so seeing that desire kind of grow within soldiers who do not come from the same denominational tradition that I do, but them knowing that it is for them, and it kind of this growing expectation that I know that when I come to religious service at drill, I'm going to be fed, not just in a spiritual sense, but in something that's a little more tangible, in receiving bread and wine that's broken and poured for us and, for the forgiveness of sin, as our confessions say. That's a beautiful thing to see, especially coming from folks from other traditions that don't have necessarily the same view of Holy Communion that Lutherans do, which that's a really cool and powerful thing to see.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And the last question I have for you is we were talking about pluralism.
Mm-hmm.
And how important is pluralism, which for those that may not recognize that word, pluralism is, as chaplains, understanding and respecting other different faith and spiritual perspectives and supporting those. So how important has it been in, how long have you been a chaplain now?
Oh gosh, since 2014. So 11 years as a chaplain.
Okay.
And then chaplain candidate time. And,
right, yeah. Right. So in that 11-ish plus years, how has pluralism impacted your view of ministry and, or maybe changed it? And also how has it, how have you seen it play a role in the lives of those soldiers that you serve?
One, it's paramount that chaplains can play well with others. The Lutheran Church has a very kind of ecumenical sense to it. We have multiple denominations that we are in full communion partnerships with. It's really, we have this kind of commitment to partnering with others to begin with. So that's kind of a part of who I am as a Lutheran pastor to begin with. I always want to reach kind of, I don't want to say across the aisle, but, out to folks who are different than us. We are always better together than we are, trying to do our own thing. But when it comes to pluralism, one, the role of the chaplain is to defend the First Amendment rights of every soldier to the freedom of religion or even lack thereof. So if we're not able to do that, then we're ineffective.
Right.
And so there's a couple of soldiers that immediately come to mind, a couple of soldiers that I've worked with over the years that were either Wiccan or Norse pagan. I supervised a chaplain that was on active duty who's an imam, who is an absolute rock star chaplain.
Right.
That we have very different religious beliefs. But I'm going to tell you what, Malik Shakur, if he's ever, somehow listening to this thing, the dude is a rock star chaplain. He's absolutely incredible. His soldiers love him. He had a beautiful relationship with the battalion commander he had at the time, who happened to be Jewish. And so to see these two,
right,
servant leaders whose religious traditions don't tend to get along very well, they both recognized, hey, we both come from low-density faith groups. Let's work together to serve all of our soldiers. And it was one of the coolest, most beautiful things I've seen to date. But we have to be able to do that. I keep coming back to, when I think about pluralism and some of the dogmatic things that our brothers and sisters kind of get into, my rebuttal to it every time is to think about St. Paul's first letter to the church in Corinth, chapter 13, which we hear at all the weddings, right? It's the love chapter.
Right, right.
Love does not insist on its own way. And if that's the place where we operate from, if we are insisting on our own way and not able to see the joy and the beauty in other people and in their faith traditions, I don't have to give mine up to support you in yours, because love doesn't insist on its own way. Mm. And if the God that I serve teaches me that, then I have to be willing to go forth and do likewise. So I think that pluralism is one of the most important parts of chaplaincy ministry. And it's the same in the parish. Not everybody that walks through the doors of the church is a practicing Christian. I have one family at St. David who, he's Muslim, she's Christian. He comes to church every week with her and their two kids, and they're raising them in a Christian household. But dad's not a practicing Christian. It's got to be okay.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, and it's finding that common ground.
Absolutely.
It's finding common ground, and once you find that common ground, a lot of good can be done.
Absolutely.
And for me, that's been the takeaway from pluralism for me, is recognizing and accepting people for their beliefs, their lack of beliefs, who they worship, what they worship. But at the end of the day, it's about recognizing and appreciating our similarities.
Absolutely.
In a world that has a tendency to look at our differences.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we're wrapping it up, Greg. And I love you as a brother. I appreciate you taking some time to come in. I'm glad this isn't on video, because Greg, his power went out. He didn't shave. so he's not in uniform either. He's wearing his collar. He's rocking it. And Mr. Rogers vest. So it's quite a sight to see. But I really do appreciate you coming in here, my friend, and sharing your experience as a chaplain, your experience in the intent for you behind communion. And more importantly, I appreciate your friendship. So absolutely. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that concludes our first inaugural Chap Chat. Hopefully you got something out of it. Didn't fall asleep. And stay tuned, because we're going to have more. And again, the intent behind this podcast is to explore resilience and where people find their strength. And if you're a person out there listening that has a story that you think needs to be told, something that where you find your strength from, or that you've overcome, and in the time it happened, it was painful, but now that you've come through it and you look back, you've had some growth occur because of that, please reach out to me. I'd love to hear your story. I'd love to have some transparency in having you talk about that. And maybe you can be a source of encouragement for others. So that concludes this podcast. I appreciate you tuning in, and may all take care.